The Tom Woods Show, episode 603.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, don't miss out on the event of the year. Bob Murphy and I are hosting a cruise. That's right, it's the Contra Cruise, October 9th to 16th, 2016, aboard Royal Caribbean. Check it out at ContraCruise.com. Hey, everybody, welcome to another post-debate episode of the show featuring Lou Rockwell. And I have actually been attracting a number of new listeners recently who are new to the whole movement. So for you and for you only, I'll tell you who Lou Rockwell is. Of course, we're talking to the publisher of LouRockwell.com, which all self-respecting libertarians read every day, the founder and chairman of the Mises Institute, Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org, which is the center for Austrian economics anywhere in the world. You will learn an enormous amount by visiting that site. And he was also chief of staff to Ron Paul. So I'm just delighted to have a chance to talk to him again. Lou, here we are again. Welcome back.
Tom, we're going to have fun today. We always have fun, but I think we may have more fun.
I have to say, for the first time, I can actually say that was worth watching.
It was fun to see them fight, isn't it?
It absolutely was. And then I think there was one moment where I think there was the most crosstalk I've ever seen in any situation. They're all just the three of them talking at once, and not one of them will give up. You can't understand what any of them is saying. Wolf Blitzer doesn't know what to do. It's just great. And then at one point, I mean, Blitzer was so thrown by the whole situation. There was a one point where Ted Cruz says, Wolf, what, are you not going to let me talk about Obamacare? Look, Senator, you'll have an opportunity to talk about many things. Yeah, but look, Obamacare is very important to me. I've had a lot to do with it. Look, Senator, all right, go ahead. I mean, that's not the way Wolf Blitzer normally operates. So what an interesting event. I think we can safely say, even though Carson had a much better closing statement than he normally does, it's obviously true that Kasich and Carson are really just not part of this anymore. So I think it's safe to just talk about the main three, right?
Although I got to give Ben Carson credit for, I thought, the best line of the night when he was talking about how you examine potential Supreme Court nominees. He said, you have to look at the fruit salad of their life.
Oh, yeah, that actually was a good line. That's right. Yeah, that was a good line. Yeah, I got to start using fruit salad in that way. All right. Now, the conventional wisdom was that Rubio had just a great night. And in fact, I watched some of the post-debate interviews, and they had Ted Cruz on CNN. And they said, Senator Cruz, a lot of the commentators are saying that – I don't know if you saw this, Lou. They're asking Cruz – a lot of the commentators are saying Marco Rubio had a very good night, and Cruz cut in and said, oh, you don't say. I've never heard any of the pundit class ever say that Marco had a good night. So I thought, okay, that actually is kind of funny. But that is the conventional wisdom. Before getting into the weeds here, give me your overall impression of what went on last night.
Well, I'm going to mention, first of all, as I usually do, the Drudge Report poll.
Yeah.
So this is going on all day today, so people can check and see any changes. So this is about 500,000 people a little earlier. Trump at 55%, Cruz at 20, Rubio at 17, Kasich at 5, Carson at 3. And that's pretty much the way it's been in all the post-debate polls. So I must say that as fun as this whole thing was, I don't think it changed anything. We'll see with the polls and then, of course, the primaries. But I think, Rubio, as you say, is hailed by all the media. I think they gave him a pill. I think they gave him a little Adderall or some other methamphetamine, prescription methamphetamine, it was like an upper. So he's yapping like a little dog. He sounded, if I may quote Hillary Clinton, like he was going, rawk, 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 rawk. So that's Rubio. And I found also maybe this is a pill. When he was trying to explain his health care plan and other things, I couldn't follow what he was saying. And I assume that means nobody else could follow him either. He seemed sadly out of it, except that, of course, he was more aggressive, if that's quite the word, for his fruit salad. I don't think it changed anything. Also, yeah, the stuff he was talking about that Trump had 35 years ago had used 200 illegal Polish workers and got a big fine brought on by a union complaint. And I noticed Ann Coulter said, oh, we're supposed to worry about 200 Polish workers, these are very smart people, she said, by the way, all these years ago, but many, many millions of illegal immigrants, hey, that's okay. Marco doesn't worry about that at all. In fact, he thinks it's a great thing. So it's, I don't know. I don't think he actually did it himself any good, even though he enjoyed himself. It's not actually true that Trump University was a fraud, despite this civil lawsuit. I have a friend, you know him too, although I'm not going to give his name, who's very anti-Trump. But because he might have written something on the Trump University back in the day, he attended some of it. And he told me, he said, I know all about these courses that explain to people how you're going to flip houses and how to make money from distressed housing and that sort of thing. He said, this was by far the best program I ever sat in. He said, the teachers were spectacular. The curriculum was very serious. And he said, of course, not everybody has got the abilities, even though they have the knowledge, to make money in this. It
right.
requires entrepreneurial skills and an attitude and work ethic and type of personality and so forth. But he said the idea that this was a fraud, he said it's just a joke. The fact that there's a civil lawsuit over it, an attempt to get money out of Trump, is not. He said there's nothing there. There's no there, which I think is pretty much everything Rubio says.
All right, so let's let's just say on Rubio, the fact that there's never any comic relief, it makes him too much to take. It's just last night before I saw that everybody had concluded that the correct position was he had had a wonderful night, I just thought it's just nonstop attack, yell. Whereas with Trump, he's funny sometimes. He says funny things, or it's just some of his little asides. He'll say something utterly devastating about Cruz, and he'll say, as an aside, these are minor details. But then he goes. I mean, that's at least fun. But Rubio, he can't even smile half the time. It's just. I don't personally find that attractive.
No, a little attack dog, unimpressive, a little chihuahua.
Well, I mean,
he's not.
Basically, I felt like they were all kind of unimpressive. I mean, Trump was good in. He had some good moments that I want to talk about. And he was good at defending himself and in hitting back when. When Cruz was talking about poll numbers and who's going to beat Hillary, and he said, "Well, look, I'm crushing you everywhere. So if I'm going to lose to Hillary, as you say, then you're going to get killed." I mean, that was good, but it's clearly true that Trump on a lot of things does come off to my ear as a lightweight. I mean, the fact that on healthcare, almost the only thing he can say is open up competition across state lines. I agree with that. And even when he states it, using really awkward phrase, get rid of the lines around the states. No one's going to know what that means. And then he's got really
And I think Rubio, by the way, didn't know what it meant. He kept repeating it. And at first I thought, well, he's making fun of it.
Yeah, but he clearly
didn't
know
what it meant. But then I realized he didn't know what it meant.
Yeah. No, he just means break down barriers to competition. And that's great. But he honestly seems to not have anything else to say about that, and that's not good.
And of course, all these people are, and of course, he's bad on a lot of stuff, Trump. But all these people are talking about, well, you can't have socialized medicine. What do they think Medicare and Medicaid are?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we've had socialized medicine in this country for a very long time. Maybe it's more properly called fascist medicine because it's the big private entities in cahoots with the government rather than state industries. But it's. Not much to choose from.
Well, let's talk about the whole question of being an honest broker between Israel and the Palestinians.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I was glad to see Rubio mention the key issue: Israel, and also Israel.
Yeah, I was afraid that Israel wouldn't get mentioned. Because it features so in such a small and insignificant way in these debates, but it did manage to make its way into this one. And you had Trump saying that he wanted to try to be an honest broker between the parties, and he's a negotiator and a deal maker, and this would be the deal of a lifetime, deal of a century, and he would love to try his hand at it. And of course, needless to say, in that audience, here was the entire applause. that was it. Whereas as soon as you say you can't negotiate with savages, well, the whole house comes down and so on. Now, I personally, I'm not so sure that that situation can be negotiated. I'm not so sure that there is a good outcome that we could see.
Well, in fact, Trump has said that, of course.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There may be no solution, but what certainly there's no harm in trying. But the response from that audience, where it's somebody who says, you know, I'm really going to make a real try to see if I can bring about peace, and it's crickets. And the people who are saying, what? You shouldn't even – what? Are you crazy? What? Yeah, yeah, we'll make peace as soon as they meet all our demands, this sort of
and
thing.
Then, and the Rubio said, you know, you can't have – you can't be an honest broker when one side is the spawn of Satan and the other one angels from heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, I mean, that's essentially what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, that's the – that's why the whole Mideast peace process has been such kabuki theater for so long. It's just all been a fraud because, of course, the referee owns one of the teams or is owned by the team or whatever. But they're it's not the referee's not a referee. He's a partisan. So it's just all been a trick. But it's good to see Trump stand a little apart on that.
And
in fact,
was
he
amazing.
Was really very good on foreign policy as usual. I mean, he was the least interventionist of any of these people. Kasich talked about going to war against North Korea, assassinating Kim, whatever his name is, the dictator of North Korea, and causing who knows what kind of catastrophe. And whatever is wrong with North Korea, and obviously horrendous stuff in North Korea, what are they doing to us? They've never done anything to us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it's just, why are you trying to make trouble? Why are you trying to make trouble all over the world? But Trump said, you know, don't make trouble with the North Koreans in a sense. He said, by the way, we shouldn't have gone into Iraq, shouldn't have gone into Libya, shouldn't be trying to overthrow Assad. These guys all are anti-terrorist. They're all anti-jihadists. And what, you know, it just made everything worse. He once again said, if only all our politicians had just gone to the beach instead of making foreign policy, the whole world would be better off. Well, you know, that's of course exactly right. So while he's bad on a lot of stuff, he continues to be by far the best on foreign policy in this crew, both Democrats and Republicans.
The fact that he just came right out and said the world would be much better off if we had Saddam Hussein in charge of Iraq and we had Gaddafi in Libya. You know, these were terrible people, but at least they killed the terrorists. And combine that with his statement that he'd like to try to bring about peace with Israel and the Palestinians. And again, whether that's a fool's errand or not, the point is that is you know, something you're not allowed to say, certainly in a Republican primary. If he gets away with this, Lou, then this – I mean, we are living in very, very volatile times indeed if he's able to do that, because to say that – no political consultant would have urged him to make these points is about the least you could say about it.
Well, at least, you know, Roger Stone tells us that unlike the rest of these guys who do weeks of preparation, very long days of preparation, mock debates, people, and of course, Marco Rubio's case, giving him stuff to memorize, Trump just walks into the debate. Obviously, he's thought about it. He makes no preparations and he just goes. So I think we can tell from some of his responses that that's the way he does it. But nevertheless, there's a certain air of authenticity to that as versus these other guys who were like, you know, French geese being force-fed. It's, you know, and then they regurgitate. It's a very different process.
All right. Let's talk about other highlights. I mean, there were moments in that debate where they were all just shouting at each other, and because of the rule that if you get mentioned or attacked in a statement, you get to respond, it seemed like it was going to be an endless loop. There would be no way for Kasich and Carson to get into the debate, and indeed they didn't.
And in fact, it was Carson, I must say, was funny when he said, would somebody please attack me?
I did like that line. And the audience liked that line too. And you know, and
as to Kasich, right, how many times do we have to hear about the 75 years he was chairman of the XYZ committee?
I know.
I mean, come on. I mean, is that supposed to be impressive? These guys, of course, it's interesting. And of course, Trump made this point, except for himself and Ben Carson. These guys are all products of the government. They've all spent their entire lives in the government, or in Rubio's case, sometimes as a lobbyist to the government, but they've never had a productive minute in their lives. That says something about them. And maybe this is just typical of the political class, but I've never heard anybody make an effective election point about it. So I think it's very neat.
I want to get into some more specifics, some more fun moments, but before we do that, I have a quick message because I'm giving away a free book. Folks, all of us have lost a debate over the years, and it's no fun, whether it's with your family or coworkers or that annoying guy on Facebook. Nobody wants to lose a debate. well, you never have to lose a debate again, thanks to my LibertyClassroom.com, where you can learn the history and economics they didn't teach you. In courses taught by me and by faculty members I trust that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. Plus, get all your questions answered in our Q&A forums with faculty. And for people joining between, say, February 22nd and February 29th, 2016, a special deal. We're giving away autographed copies of Bob Murphy's book, Choice, which is the perfect book to read if you are an intermediate Austrian economics student and you don't feel quite ready to read Ludwig von Mises, then read Bob Murphy, and you'll get that book for free. So check out the whole deal, the free book. And, by the way, our coupon page, where you can also get a discount. So you get a discount and a free book and a great product. All the details of this deal are spelled out on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/603. Don't let this opportunity slip through your fingers. Only a few days left. Check it out at tomwoods.com/603. All right, let's spend a little time on Ted Cruz. And before we talk about his debate performance, let's say something about an article you linked to at your political theater blog, which I cannot recommend highly enough, at lourockwell.com, the political theater blog. Look for it on the homepage and you'll be hooked as I am. I didn't have time to read the link myself, but apparently it's a news story about Cruz urging Rand Paul to endorse him and Rand refusing. What are the details there?
Well, it's just, they use the word begging, and I think that's correct. I mean, asking again and again and again, and Rand finally saying he's not going to endorse anybody. And I know that earlier Rand had asked Cruz not to run for president so he could have his turn, and of course Cruz paid no attention to him. So I guess Rand must be enjoying this, but why is Cruz wanting that? He wants to appeal to the Ron Paul people in Texas. And so he thinks this is a way to get it. He didn't get it. He's not going to get it. Rand is never going to endorse him. And but it was funny that he was apparently asking through himself and through surrogates again and again and again and again. And finally, of course, just got the big no.
How about that? I didn't make the connection with Texas in particular because, of course, he has got to pull out all the stops on Texas. If he loses Texas, that's a humiliation. Do you have a prediction on that?
Well, I tend to think the polls are right and that he's ahead in Texas. Which I don't think myself, but if it turns out he really did help himself in that debate and his attacks on Trump start to take hold, I would say he can win Texas. He probably is likely to win Texas just because he's the senator and a popular senator there. So we just have to see. A lot depends on whether, and I was glad that Trump started to go after him on his loans from Goldman Sachs and Citibank that he hid, that helped him get elected to the U.S. Senate.
Cruz didn't say a word about that.
No, his wife is vice president of Goldman Sachs, and he's very, very, this is a very connected guy, very establishment guy, who in order to make himself an anti-establishment guy, set out to bug everybody in Washington. Nothing wrong with that, of course. But he actually, despite the fact that he called Mitch McConnell a liar, and of course Mitch McConnell is a liar, and similar kinds of things, he's an establishment guy. He represents all his life. He was an official in the Bush presidential campaign, an official in the George Bush administration in Texas, and that's where he comes from. Also, do Americans really want a president who sounds like a TV preacher? I mean, I find that voice and that demeanor and that sing-songy stuff so off-putting. I mean, you can take it for a little while, but are we going to have to hear that every day for, the next 4 years?
Yeah.
I hope not.
And his dramatic pauses are too long. They're just like just 2 seconds too long.
And of course, like Rubio, he has no sense of humor, which I think is a deadly—
Yeah, or he has a bad sense of humor. I mean, he tries, but he just
doesn't know what's funny. No, he doesn't know what's funny.
Yeah, I guess that is what your sense of humor is all about. How is it then that he may indeed be hanging on in Texas, but Rubio's getting clobbered in Florida?
Well, I think that Trump is much better known in Florida. You know, he's a big wheel in Florida with his golf courses, his Mar-a-Lago, and he's got tremendous investments in Florida, and he's been He's been a part-time resident of Florida for years, spent a huge amount of time there. He's just a big figure there. Cruz is a much bigger figure in Texas. But I think everything's very fluid. I think Trump could win Texas. If he does, then Cruz can just go back to Goldman Sachs or whatever because he's done. And I think if Marco can't win Florida, he's done. And certainly it doesn't look like he's going to. But, you know, these things can change. Maybe the establishment is right. Maybe they finally got the magic bullet is going to take down Trump. I still continue to think, and I have to credit Michael Savage, and I'm not a fan of his, for pointing this sort of thing out. But, you know, Cruz looks evil. I mean, you just need a pair of Halloween fangs and a black cloak, and he could immediately appear in a vampire movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something very odd and funny about him, his eyes and so forth. That's not his fault, but it seems to me a tough thing in a politician.
And by the way, Lou, I'm gonna get attacked for this. Oh boy, you people talk about only frivolous things. First of all, we don't talk about only frivolous things. But secondly, have you met the American electorate? They tend to make decisions on frivolous grounds. I hate to be the one to break this to you. So after Super Tuesday, what happens? I mean, it looks like Trump is going to win almost everywhere, but yet. So it's like, you know, it's likely that people will drop out of the race, but on the other hand, there's got to be one of them who stays in as the anti-Trump. So who's that going to be?
Well, I guess they hope it's going to be Rubio, but Rubio certainly can't stay in if he believably stay in if he loses Florida, especially by the sorts of margins. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, he's asked for Jeb Bush's endorsement in Florida. Oh boy, that'll do him a lot of good.
Yeah.
So, you know, these. And of course, they're making all these ads against Trump. These are the same types of people who made all the ads for George Bush and Jeb Bush and similar worthies. They just especially in this year, sort of oligarchical ad campaigns, they just don't work. People have turned off the ads, and I think it's a great thing. They don't. They see a political ad come on television. They mentally just change the channel, if not actually change the channel. So I don't – just like money hasn't worked this time, of course, Trump has spent, relatively speaking – I'm sure he spent the least money of any serious presidential campaign in, you know, many, many decades. And so the regular rules don't work. Sheldon Adelson hasn't given his big donations to anybody. The Kochs haven't given any money to anybody. And, you know, they talk about their – well, now they're really going to go after, you know, after Trump and – I guess Adelson feels the same way, but can they? Does it make a difference? Isn't that just a big help to Trump if it turns out the oligarchs want to get rid of him? And I thought it was even interesting that Roth, I don't even know how his name is pronounced. Is it Do That? Sounds like a good New York Times column.
Oh, yeah.
Do That.
Yeah.
Do That.
Yeah, so I know who you mean.
So he had a tweet where he said, I know how we can end the Trump campaign, and he had a video of an assassination of a candidate from a movie. So, you know, I thought if he'd said this about Hillary
or Obama,
he'd be under arrest.
Yeah.
He said it about Trump and everybody's, oh, well, it's a joke gone bad. You know, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But of course, there's real hate at the center of the establishment. Virulent, virulent hate. There's a climate of hate, as they've talked about after the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, exactly. They're creating a climate of it. But it's so funny that, if he had done that with Obama, it would have been absolutely inconceivable that he had done it just as a joke. It must be racism because no one ever jokes about black people. But of course, yeah, no one dares. Right? No one dares say anything about anybody these days. All right. Are there any parting thoughts that we have here about this? I mean, this was a debate that in a way I think people almost had to see for themselves. And if you go to YouTube, you will find – videos where they take the juiciest parts and they just put them all together. It was extremely lively, let's just say, extremely energetic. There was no low energy Jeb Bush to pull the thing down. It was really, really lively. At this point, if Trump really has the success that it looks like he's likely to have, would there be any more debates after this?
Well, I guess they've still got debates scheduled, sure. And there's going to be unless, of course, there are no other candidates. But I don't think that's going to be the case. Carson is going to continue to stay in as long as he's got any money. I don't know about Kasich. He has to worry about his own political standing in Ohio, I guess. But Cruz and Rubio, as long as they can stay in, they're going to stay in. And if people make it possible for Rubio, especially with the donations to his super PACs, to stay in, then he's going to stay in. And they, you know, they still have hopes, all of these people, of a so-called brokered convention. Although my own guess is if Trump goes into that convention with a majority of delegates and is denied the nomination, then that'll be the death of the Republican Party, which, by the way, of course, would be a great thing. But I think they don't quite know what the reaction would be to such a thing.
Oh, yeah. That would confirm everything that he and the Ron Paul people have been saying for years and years. It would confirm it all.
And, of course, they cheated Ron Paul. And, in fact, ironically, the rules that now exist in the Republican Party for the running the convention, and the evil Paul Ryan as the chairman of the convention, were written to block Ron Paul, to make sure that Ron Paul, they were so petty, what creeps, to prevent him for his name from being put in nomination. They did not want anybody speaking about Ron Paul at the, and then Romney is surprised that Ron Paul didn't endorse him. Well, of course, Romney could have changed his name to Ron Paul. Ron Paul wouldn't have endorsed him. So it didn't matter how he was treated. But they think they can just step on somebody, and they're gonna lick his boot. That's not Ron Paul, and not anybody with any kind of a sense of themselves and a sense of self-worth. So I don't know. I think apparently there's still people who feel Jeb can be the candidate, come in as the compromiser who can appeal to the broadest. You know, I think that's just nonsense, but. Actually, a brokered convention, of course, from our standpoint, we'd have a lot more interesting shows.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It would be a huge amount of fun. There hasn't been anything like this since 1952, when the Eisenhower forces, under the lead of the evil Earl Warren, who was made, as a thank you, the head of the Supreme Court, stole the nomination from Robert Taft. What they did was they had the Rules Committee toss out delegations from states who had been elected by pro-Taft people and install pro-Eisenhower people. I mean, just voted them out, voted the new guys in just to, my guess is they can't get away with that stuff these days, but they did get away with it in 1952. And, that was the last time we had a Republican nominee who was not an interventionist in foreign policy, the great Bob Taft.
Yeah.
So, and this Ron Paul, of course, carries on that tradition. And while there's so much wrong with Trump in so many different areas, he does not seem to me belligerent. I mean, I think his personal conduct is exactly the way he'd be as president. If you don't hit him, he's not going to hit you. On the other hand, if you hit him, watch out.
Yeah.
So I don't like that either. But that's far better than going around the world overthrowing, as these guys all the rest of them. Advocated overthrowing the government of North Korea. What is going to be the result of that? It's always good to remember, by the way, when we think of the Korean situation, the U.S. has always prevented any kind of reconciliation, any kind of talks, any kind of friendship visits and that sort of thing between North Koreans and South Koreans, because the U.S., of course, always wants trouble. I mean, I'm reminded of the fact that John F. Kennedy had President Diem and his brother of South Vietnam assassinated because it turned out they were having secret reconciliation talks with people in the North. The empire doesn't like that kind of stuff and won't put up with it. So they've stoked all this hostility in Korea. Will it end in some horrific thing where atomic weapons are used? I mean, I hope to goodness not. But who knows? You got a lot of very irresponsible, crazed neocon warmongers. They really are all flipping out. I have a blog today about Robert Kagan's op-ed in the Washington Post.
Yeah, I saw that.
Of course, is hyper interventionist, hyper warmongering Washington Post, and the headline is a neocon holds his breath, turns blue. I mean, these people are absolutely freaking out. Whether it's the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Weekly Standard, Bill Kristol, all of them, and I must say, it's fun to see. Anybody who's hated by the neocons can't be all bad.
Well, my view is, you and I are not going to vote for any of these people.
No, of course not.
But I don't see how you could get – I mean, for all the Trump derangement syndrome that's out there among libertarians, I don't see how you could get worse than a President Marco Rubio. How could you possibly? I mean, I'm absolutely serious here. How could you possibly get worse or scarier than President Marco Rubio out of the existing choices? I don't think you can. And by the
and yet there are libertarians who prefer Rubio to Trump.
Yeah, that amazes me. Then I don't know what to say. I mean, given again, none of us are going to vote for these people. But I
of course you shouldn't vote.
I mean, basically, what you're saying is George W. Bush really wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah, no, of course, far better than we have the George W. Bushes, the Obamas, and similar kinds of guys.
Yeah.
Of course, also, by the way, we have to keep in mind, despite the fact that we all assume the president can do whatever he wants, he's the head of a gigantic, because the biggest, richest, most powerful government in the history of the world by many magnitudes. The president is not actually in charge of all this. Yes, he can do a lot, but no president is capable of the kinds of massive changes that we would like to see. A lot of this is a little bit of theater. Political theater, but still, I think the fact that Trump has undermined the whole PC business, everybody's being indoctrinated in, he's actually made it possible to question it. He's made it possible to question an immigration policy designed to change the American population for purposes of the state and its friends. And no discussion was ever allowed about this. Trump is exactly the right that by his bringing it up, he's allowed a discussion. Nobody is still talking about what it all means, why it began, who supports it, and that sort of thing. These are all very controversial subjects to get into. But shouldn't have been a subject for discussion, that they wanted to change the American population, get rid of the old one and bring in a new one? How come the government and its friends can do that and you're not allowed to ever mention it because you're, as Kagan said, you're a bigot? If you don't have his views on immigration and of course everything else.
There's one more thing I want to say about Rubio I forgot to mention earlier. Yesterday's episode I had Scott Horton on to talk about Syria, and I bet a lot of people who follow politics just really don't understand what's going on in Syria other than we should stay out of it, which is a good enough instinct. But basically, the Rubio / Hillary Clinton / Obama / McCain policy in Syria, which is basically the same policy, except a couple of them want to double down on it a little bit more, but it's basically the same policy, is so crazed and nonsensical and counterproductive and self-defeating and contradictory and crazy. You can't possibly know how crazy it is. So I would urge people, listen to that episode. That's at tomwoods.com/602. This one's tomwoods.com/603. Listen to that episode with Scott Horton. And you're just going to say, oh my gosh, we got to get out of there.
Tom, I'll just say that you're absolutely right that it's crazy and self-defeating, all that, from the standpoint of a person of goodwill and a person of intelligence.
Yeah,
but from
right.
the standpoint of a destructionist, from the standpoint of people who want
right.
killing,
right.
want destruction and feel that their power can thereby be increased and they can remake the world, this is all great stuff. The killing, the destruction, Christians who've been living there since the time of the apostles, being thrown out of their homes, entirely purged from Iraq, from Syria. They're for all this stuff. They like it. They're bloodthirsty monsters. And Marco Rubio is definitely one of them. Or maybe he's too stupid to be one of them, but he's in the control of these people.
Yeah. And you know, what you just said, Lou, is going to seem over the top to some people. But when you hear Scott talk about it, it's the only option left because there's no policy reason to be doing what they're doing. Again, I don't want to spoil it. People should listen to that episode. It's shocking. So you are left with the conclusion that these people must think and just be different from the rest of us. There's no other way to describe it. All right. Well, listen, let's hope for our sake, Lou, that there will be future debates, that they won't all just drop out, that we'll be able to talk about this. Because I would hate to stay in. Exactly. I would hate to have to wait for the general election to do more of our debate shows, but I'll tell you, that's going to be juicy, isn't it?
I noticed that Chuck Todd said the other day that Hillary would be missing the Clinton impeachment scandals if she were running against Trump, because she would be looking back on those days as the good old days, because he would definitely engage in a scorched earth policy. And he also said that Bill Clinton had been complaining privately that his favorables had been reduced from 51 to 39 by Trump's one Instagram picture, tweeted out, sent out an Instagram photo of Clinton and Bill Cosby together and said, two of a kind. One act by Trump had dramatically diminished Clinton. And of course, they're terrified. And Todd said, you know, they all wanted Trump as the opponent. Now they're all terrified of Trump and what he would do to them.
Because think of the things he says offhandedly to Cruz and Rubio and multiply it by 100 and think of the things he'd be saying about Bill Clinton. Now, of course, again, none of this has to do with policy or whatever. It's just in terms of watching one wing of the establishment get taken down. Well, you know, might be amusing to see. All right. Well,
Luke, I'm saying we have great debates to look – my guess is we have great debates to look forward to, even better than so far.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, Lou, thanks for your time today. I always appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today, but two quick things before we wrap up. First is, of course, don't forget the special offer, because we've got just a few more days where we're giving away Bob Murphy's book. It's a $25 book. You get it for nothing, and it's a book that has gotten more endorsements than any book I have ever seen, and people love this book, and I'm talking about professional economists saying this is the best thing you could read if you want to get ready to read Mises and the really advanced texts. You can't do better than Bob Murphy's book choice. So we're giving that away just for a few more days with subscriptions to libertyclassroom.com. Get all the details at tomwoods.com/603. But secondly, I got another bonus episode coming up for you guys this weekend. Remember, the bonus episodes are generally episodes that are a little bit unusual, or the topic is unusual. So, for example, I've been mentioning that I may do an episode with my mother, so that would be a bonus episode. Or an episode on music would also tend to be a bonus episode. Well, this weekend, I'll just say that I've got a special guest that I am thrilled to talk to, who will be great for all you entrepreneurial types. And even if you're not an entrepreneurial type, which is a sad thing, by the way, but even if you're not, you'll still enjoy listening to this guy because he's just so great. And you'll say, I'm not sure I'm interested in that topic. Yes, you will be, because of the way he explains it. It'll make you want to do this very thing. And he's got a great newsletter that I get. I love this newsletter. He does not have an affiliate program for it. I'm not earning anything by promoting him to you, but I've just learned a lot from him. And when I learn a lot from somebody, I want to share that knowledge with other people. So I hope that whets your appetite, even though I've basically told you absolutely nothing. But that episode would be released a couple of days from now, and it'll be episode 604, a bonus episode in addition to my 5 episodes per week. So that's all I have to tell you. Go enjoy your weekend. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.